But Sam at that time had started taking LSD, and that had a profound experience, was a profound experience for him, and it had wrought an enormous change in him, right? And it wasn't all good by any stretch of the imagination. He was, and he was handing it out. I mean, basically, he had a source for LSD, a major source for LSD, and he was passing it out to, as though it was like some sort of sacrament. And you have to do this to really come into some level of reality or consciousness, or, find out who you are or whatever.
This must have been 66.
Yeah, it would have been close to that. Yeah, it would have been 65, 60. Well, I think he committed suicide in 66. So this was awfully close. It was short. The last time that I saw him was in this small apartment, and he and I can remember that he was at that time he was on the verge of exploring Tibetan Buddhism, and it was the Leary Alpert experience with LSD that was coming out of New York. There was like a guide. They were giving instructions and warnings and protocols on how to take this. You should have a guide, read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, understand, what's going on, and be comfortable with these, manifestations that are going to pop up into your head, and how to be calm in that sort of thing. So that was, and I think that the impression I had, it was that Tibetan Book of the Dead raised his curiosity about Tibetan Buddhism. And at that time, I think he was married, and his wife had was planning to go to Tibet on a visit or something like that, and he wanted to go with her. And so he ended up working it out with her, and he went on that trip. And but that
This was Barbara Budd.
well, I think that was his first wife, or
I wonder what her name was. I
yeah.
don't know.
Jamie knows, but
Okay.
but basically that at that time, like the there was we were we had a conversation at his place, and he was experiencing an enormous amount of regret and guilt about having put all this LSD out there, because he was starting to see that people weren't doing it right, and it was causing like a lot of there was suicides, people were jumping off bridges, people were not able to handle it, right? And I was having a sense of the same sense of responsibility for, selling grass and hash, not to that level, but I could still see that it wasn't all, flowers and sharing. And we talked about that, and he expressed, that we sort of, sympathized with that sense of responsibility and what we could do about it, right? And there was it, cats out of the bag. There was nothing you could do about it, right? And that was, and I remember that at some point in that conversation, we were drinking Teacher's Irish whiskey out of a Mickey, and he pulled out a 38 pistol that he had because he was extremely paranoid. And this, he had been to New York or something, and he had come back with this powerful sense of paranoia. And I think that was the gun that he used to kill himself. And it wasn't long after that that he shot himself. And that somehow it was almost as though I felt in my own way at a certain level that I was like, not that I was by any stretch of the imagination and having no idea what else he was up to, but I felt a really, you know, connection with him, and that I kind of understood what his suicide was all about at some aspect of it, and it had to do with the increasing paranoia and his sense of responsibility, right, that he couldn't erase, you know. And
he was quite successful, really, in his own terms, wasn't he? I mean, he had kind of defined his project, and he had in you know, had set the wheels in motion in many ways.
Well, he had, but
in terms of the Sound Gallery and in terms of
and the Trips Festival, which he organized, which was strangely derivative. I mean, the Trips Festival came out of the fact that there were Trips Festivals in San Francisco. And he became, because everybody that knew him and had experienced the Sound Gallery knew that he was the father of that. And so it was up to him to stage a real Trips Festival, you know, to do it right. So that put, you know, an enormous, like, well, you know, a certain amount of pressure in a certain person that would be an opportunity to, you know, to flower. Mm-hmm. But for him, it had the exact opposite. There was a lot of pressure on him, and people were looking to him to what's next, or, you know, what do we do now? Like, you know, are we doing it right? And he didn't handle that very well at all.
Right. Okay. So he had gone. He went with his first wife to Tibet. He met the Dalai Lama. Is that right?
Now, yeah.
This is before you knew him.
No, this was after.
After you knew him.
After I knew him. Yeah.
Okay. So and this was before you and he were sitting down in the in his apartment.
Yeah.
And discussing the ethics.
That's
of,
right. And also, like, one of the things that came out of that conversation was, like, in terms of discussing the responsibilities for peddling all these drugs, right? Was like, you know, what's this Tibetan Buddhism all about? Like, how come that it's, you know, that every kind of alternative bookstore on the West Coast is selling enormous numbers of copies of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and obviously there's some sort of, you know, benefit going back to the movement, right? And it's financing some part of the exodus. It's financing, you know, the reorganization and the resettlement of that, you know, the Dalai Lama and his community. And yet it has this incredible dark side to it. It's at a tremendous human cost, like a tremendous human cost, and it's skewing, like, you know, the world consciousness that is not all good. I mean, there is some, you know, there is some good in it, but, you know, after a while, the bad definitely outweighed the good.
Oh, so we're kind of coming to the understanding at this point that the whole acid kind of revolution had its ups and downs.
Totally,
its,
yeah.
Both sides. There were two sides to
that
coin.
Yeah.
Right. For the responsible experimenter, you know, looking into, you know, the expansion of consciousness and the results in, like, mm-hmm. the arts and, you know, philosophy and so on and so forth, it could be a good thing that could nudge you, you know, one step further in
that's
quest,
right. In terms of, like, self-exploration. But then when the commercialization and the commodification of that mind state that was promoted to sell product, in other words, to, you know, if we get everybody to take acid, we'll sell out every concert, we'll sell every poster, you know, we'll sell every record. So, you know, we want to promote that. And that commercialization is what dragged all the innocents in. People who didn't you know, didn't have the maturity or the you know, the intellectual strength or the discipline to actually, you know, take that journey and do that kind of self-examination. And as is the normal, you know, proportions, right? Yeah. So, I mean, basically, the vast majority of people that participated in that kind of in that sort of mind state and entered into that state of mind were innocents and were kind of the victims and were you know, and virtually the landscape was littered with their bodies, you know, virtually. And to a certain degree, I you know, there were times when I was looking at you know, these events, the Trips festivals or the light shows, and going into these kind of caverns, and it was like zombies. You're looking at the, you know, I mean, holy mackerel, it was powerfully depressing, you know, to see, you know, what was going on. And and so that sense of responsibility, and that's where we, you know, he wasn't prepared to shift the responsibility or put any blame on the, you know, Tibetan Buddhism, because it was what it was, he felt. And again, it had, you know, redeeming, you know, there was qualities about it. And but I felt that there had been a powerful sin of omission, and it was because at the time I think that Tibetan Buddhism desperately needed the resources that were coming from the exploitation of their philosophy in terms of promoting the drug culture, and I've spoken to important leaders about that, and raised that issue with them, and I haven't found anyone who disagreed. You know.
So Sam must have been. He went to Tibet. You know, he didn't have this kind of like awareness of Tibetan philosophy.
No.
When he went to Tibet, obviously.
He came back a full tilt Tibetan Buddhist, you know.
He was moved.
He was moved.
By what he saw.
He was moved by what he saw. He was moved by the intellectual strength of, you know, the perspective, the discipline. And kind of the almost the common sense approach to life that Buddhism seems to, you know, whatever, you know, you got to bend, you know, do what you got to do, you know, there is a you know, it's like you know, survival becomes, you know, an important, you know, motivating force in your life, and will absolutely dissolve morality or in integrity and whatever, and you'll do whatever you have to do to survive if it comes, you know, down to that. And so, and consequently, and in a way, you know, this is sort of the paradox of you know, Tibetan Buddhism, when you really get into the teachings, virtually, you know, everything is sacred and nothing is sacred. You know, it's that McLuhan extension. You know, and you take that tetrad to its extreme, and it'll flip. So everything is sacred, nothing is sacred, and you do whatever you have to do to survive. And survive means, you know, if you believe that there's more to life than the physical existence, then that allows you to make certain that takes the sting, you know, the moral sting out of suicide. So it's not And I think that in that sense, that's what Sam. You know, there was no shame in it. You know, there was no shame in it, and he was he'd come to a point in terms of how he could survive. You know, and if he continued to live on this plane, he wouldn't survive. Something would die in him. So he felt that he could move into something else, give it another try, see if there was something on the other side. Which, after studying Tibetan Buddhism and the whole concept of reincarnation, which
Karma.
Also taking and karma and you know, in that sense that to a certain degree we both agreed that we'd spent a lot of karma. We had a big karmic debt, and that and how to resolve that debt, and basically it's like you get to a point and you say, well, you know, the best thing I can do for the world is stop creating any more harm and take myself out of the equation, and that's the best thing I can do for myself and for everyone.